Hi, my name is Lowell, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser Campus Radio.
Would you give me a beat?
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. CJSF 90.1 FM, diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
Today we'll be exploring the intersection between quantum science, artificial intelligence, and human consciousness as we explore three key shifts in human consciousness taking place on our planet today. Our challenge is not unlike those European philosophers and artists of the 14th century who, when faced with the Black Plague that devastated one-third of the population of Europe, brought about a renaissance in science, economics, art, and more. Today, we're in the midst of a new renaissance, when the greatest knowledge and wisdom, both ancient and contemporary, is just a few keystrokes away through digital screens accessible by billions around the planet. Our guest today, Douglas Grunther, will help us navigate the potential and cautions of this exchange of ideas and instantaneous flow of information that is in constant virtual movement as it crisscrosses the entire planet. Douglas Grunther is a creator and host of the Woodstock Roundtable, an award-winning radio talk show covering philosophy, depth psychology, and spiritual insight. He is also a dream work facilitator, and he is the author of The Quantum and the Dream, Visionary Consciousness, AI, and the New Renaissance. So please join us for the next hour as we explore creating evolutionary change, which points not to the end of time apocalypse, but to a new renaissance with our guest, Douglas Grunther. I'm speaking with Douglas at his home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Douglas, welcome.
It's such a pleasure to be with you, Justine.
Well, it's my pleasure too. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. You have written and your thoughts and your research is just takes us on a wild ride, I must say, through the research of physicists like Niels Bohr or Max Planck, psychologists Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung, biologists Lynn Margulis and Elizabeth Sartoris, and even the artist Salvador Dali. And then you take us to the Land of Oz with Dorothy. So, I mean, it's just a wild ride, and I loved it. I loved the way you connected all of these things. So I would love to talk about, when I mentioned that the new Renaissance and the three key shifts, I would like to talk about, maybe you want to say, first of all, what are the three shifts, and then talk about a little more in detail that first shift in consciousness of right brain, left brain.
Sure. And I really appreciate your description as a wild ride, because my intention throughout this was not only to get into some deep patterns that I feel are pointing us towards an evolutionary leap, but I didn't want it to just be a dry intellectual exercise. I really wanted it to be an interesting trip into the human unconscious and its creative center, and its affinity with the center of the quantum realm, with which it has a lot of connection. And I love the idea of a wild ride, because we're on one. Anyone who's paying attention, even before this election, and my book is not political, but even before this election, we're all dealing with change at a pace faster than ever before in evolution. And that's where we need to get a grip, because it's causing a lot of anxiety out there. So the three shifts that I feel are pointing us towards this new Renaissance are the following, and they're all shifts in consciousness. One is the shift from the left hemisphere of the brain to the right hemisphere, and we'll get into that. The second is the shift that we know is already happening, which is the shift from most of our information going from the printed page to the digital screen. And with all of the issues with the digital screen, and I don't ignore them, you and I wouldn't be talking right now if it wasn't for the digital screen. The third shift was the one that took the most energy, because I knew the first two when I started my book. The third shift came to me as I was writing it. It kind of emerged from all the themes. And that is the shift from the age of information to what I am calling the age of recognition. And we can get into what that recognition is. But in mentioning Lynn Margulis and Elizabeth Sartoris, that's a good clue, because I, among probably most of your listeners, was not that I was aware of the name Lynn Margulis. I knew she was important, but it wasn't until I wrote this book that I really took the time to dive into why she was such a huge and important transformational thinker. And she loved the nickname given to her, the Angry Earth Mother. It was well earned. And we can get into that. But as you pointed out, let's start with that first shift from the left hemisphere to the right. And I have to give a lot of the credit to this to a brilliant contemporary visionary thinker, Ian McGilchrist. Some of your listeners might be familiar with Ian. I got the chance to interview him for a couple of hours.
Ian McGilchrist.
Yes.
Yes.
And he's a current writer. And the first great book he wrote, called The Master and His Emissary, was one of the three or four most influential books that I've ever read, because his background is both in literature and medicine and neurology and philosophy. He truly is a Renaissance thinker. And his book has over 1,800 footnotes. So he's not making stuff up. And what he's pointed out is that most of the information that people will find if they look up left hemisphere and right hemisphere is wrong. Our brains, the frontal cortex of our brains is divided into the two hemispheres. And what Ian has shown is they look at the world through very different lenses. The left hemisphere is very good at gathering objects, seeing the world as a mechanism, and understanding the world by breaking it into simpler parts and then putting them back together. The left hemisphere of our brain can only deal with certainty. It doesn't like ambiguity, and it doesn't share. Now, you'd say, well, why has our culture been focused on this for so long? Because our ancient ancestors, when they left the cave with tools no more sophisticated than rocks and sticks, they weren't faster than the predators out there. They weren't stronger. So they had to be on guard, and they had to be very focused on finding the fruits and the nuts. They didn't even know how to garden. And as we got better and better and more sophisticated as a species, by focusing on the left hemisphere, we were able to create a lot of technology and a lot of creature comforts, which we all appreciate. But because the left hemisphere is narrow in its vision and centered on what we can gather to make our lives more comfortable and safe, we miss the bigger picture. That's the purpose of the right hemisphere. The right hemisphere understands the world holistically. It takes it in at once and understands it more on an intuitive, deeper level. It is the right hemisphere that makes us empathic. It makes us the only species on the planet that shares things with beyond just our family and ourselves. But because our culture has been so focused on the left, we've produced amazing technologies, including the digital screen and right, the AI we're right. talking with now. But we missed the bigger picture of the fact that our fossil fuel technology is literally destroying the very environment we need to stay alive.
I want to add a quote here from Einstein that I think relates to this. And he said at one time, the intuitive mind, which you're talking about is the right hemisphere. Yes. The intuitive mind is a shared gift. So there he's using that word shared, as you just mentioned. And he uses the word, this intuitive mind is a gift. And then he goes on to say, and the rational mind is a faithful servant. And so we think about that. I think about that. Yeah, right. The rational mind, it's invented this technology that we're able to see one another across, you know, thousands of miles right now. And he goes on to say, we have created a society that honors the servant, which is that rational, logical, linear mind, and has forgotten the gift of the intuitive mind. So that's really what you're talking about, isn't it? That we're moving. All right, Douglas, I'm thinking of it in as concentric circles. And I think of those people who are starting to use more and more of their intuitive mind, that sort of mind, as the outer circle. And then the next circle in are those who are maybe curious. They're functioning more linear, but they're thinking, my life isn't working. And so they're curious, and they're at least looking into the prospect of going into their intuitive mind. And then they're the inner circle of those that are just status quo. I mean, or believing in a certain reality, and that's it, and they're not questioning anything, and they're living more in that materialistic way. And I'm kind of looking at it in those ways. Does that resonate at all?
Yes, you're using different metaphors for the same thing that I'm putting my finger on. And let's stay with Professor Einstein, because he's such a perfect example, right? Because empirically, even the left hemisphere folks and most scientists and philosophers and psychologists today are still primarily oriented towards the left hemisphere. What can I get today to make my life better? And the materialist paradigm, which says I need more stuff to be happy. That's a left hemisphere understanding of the world. But everyone would agree Einstein, if not the greatest, was one of the three greatest scientists of all time. And let me give two more quotes that.
Well, I want you to give these two quotes in just 1 minute. So hold that thought, because we want to hear them. I'm here with Douglas Grunther, and he's the author of The Quantum and the Dream. His website is douglasgrunther.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Douglas Grunther. And by the way, he spells his last name G-R-U-N-T-H-E-R, Douglas Grunther. And we're talking about Einstein, and you had a couple of quotes you wanted to add to the one that I spoke about earlier.
Yeah, if we're talking about the needed shift to go from the left hemisphere to the right, Einstein is the perfect example of someone who did it and changed history and the universe and all of our lives. Two quotes from Einstein, which I authenticated. Number one, he said, "My entire career is based on a dream I had when I was 11 years old." And in my book, I mentioned a dream. It was a short dream. He's sledding in a dream as an 11-year-old. He's sledding down a slope, and he's picking up more and more speed. And as he gets so fast, the sky opens up in all this interesting color. And his 11-year-old brain intuited that there's something about speed that's expansive and colorful. Now we shift forward to he's graduated college, and as is well known, he wasn't a great student because he was a right hemisphere thinker in a left hemisphere oriented university, which we still have. And so his professors didn't think he would amount to much. Well, he wasn't bothered. He loved to think. So he took a job as a clerk in a patent office in order to support his family. And the work was easy for him, so he had plenty of time to sit at his desk and do thought experiments. Some people call this creative visualization, okay? We now know from laboratory experiments, creative visualizations, thought experiments, science did, are done in the right hemisphere of the brain, which is open to new vision. It's open to a bigger picture. It doesn't need to know what every step is going to be before it gets to the conclusion. And here's the famous thought experiment that Einstein did at his desk, which helped him arrive at relativity along with his dream. He thought it would be interesting to imagine what it would be like to chase a light beam. So in his imagined version, right hemisphere, he's chasing this light beam. And when he catches up to it, in his imagined story, time stops. So that's interesting, he felt. Maybe that means that the speed of light is faster than anything. So that combined with the dream he had where the sky opened up into colors the faster he went, along with his modest mathematical skills, he never considered himself a great mathematician, but he came up with E equals MC squared before anybody else did. And the people who are trying to understand the nature of light, which is very mysterious, who Einstein beat, they were working in expensive laboratories and well-endowed universities, but they were more stuck in the left hemisphere. And Einstein, by using the right hemisphere of his brain, arrived at what sounded mystical and crazy, okay? That there's no such thing at the speed of light as past, present, and future. And then, as we would discover with quantum theory, at the quantum level of existence, there's no such thing as past, present, and future. So these kinds of understandings cannot be handled by the left hemisphere of the brain. We need the left hemisphere when we need to do things step by step. When I drive over the Rhinecliff Bridge near me, over the Hudson River, Justine, I'm really glad that the person who engineered that bridge was a left hemisphere thinker.
Right, okay? Exactly. Yeah, right.
I want those nuts and bolts to stand the stress of cars going on.
Absolutely.
Okay? But we've made the mistake of thinking that the way we build a bridge is the way we understand the entire world.
Right.
If we did, we never would have had an Albert Einstein.
Exactly. You know, I want to ask you, Douglas, one of the things that you talk about in your book is the collective unconscious. And you talk about Freud and Jung and how they brought it in. But what's so interesting that you take it, not just the collective unconscious, you relate it to quantum physics. And that just blew me away. So can you briefly tell us how they're connected?
Yes. I'll do it through another story, which is
great.
Actual history. The person I didn't know a lot about, who I got to meet through my research in the book, was a really interesting character named Wolfgang Pauli. Okay? How brilliant was Wolfgang Pauli? He was nominated for a Nobel Prize in quantum theory by Albert Einstein. So Wolfgang Pauli, who was a contemporary of Einstein and Freud and Niels Bohr, he was part of one of the founders of quantum theory, was a brilliant Nobel Prize winning physicist who also had a very emotionally crazy life. And he sought out the counsel of the greatest psychologist of his time, Carl Jung. Okay. And they developed a relationship for over 20 years where they would get together a number of times a year to smoke cigars and drink good wine and talk about what they were convinced was the connection between the center of the quantum realm and the center of the unconscious mind. They, two of the brightest people of the 20th century, were convinced there was a connection. They never proved it scientifically, but they were convinced because Pauli's life was changed by Jung working his dreams. And Jung was convinced that his understanding of a collective unconscious, that there's a part of the human psyche we all share, was very much connected by his limited understanding of quantum theory. So what I do in my book is I say that the year 1900 was a huge synchronicity, or two or more events that clearly didn't cause each other, but are so meaningfully connected they can't be just a coincidence. And we've all experienced that.
I think you describe it as, and I know synchronicity is really important, and you mention it several times in your book, falling together in time.
That was Carl Jung's more romantic description of it, yes. A falling together in time. And we've all had this experience where you think of somebody you haven't talked to in a while, and the next day they call you or email you.
Yes.
Well, we didn't cause that to happen, but could it just be a coincidence? And in the year 1900, the first year of the modern age, Sigmund Freud published The Interpretation of Dreams, and Max Planck discovered the quantum. And I'm proposing that's a synchronicity, because Jung and Pauli were convinced that the publication of The Interpretation of Dreams showed that if we want to understand who we are as human beings, we have to embrace and understand our unconscious mind as much as our conscious mind.
And also, Douglas, when you're relating the quantum to the unconscious and everything, it's also what's happening at the same time, and what is developing in quantum theory are things such as entanglement, how things are interconnected and entangled, and non-locality, how things change even at a distance at the same time if they're related, or the uncertainty principle. So all of these things are just bubbling up at the same time, the collective unconscious. This is what you're talking about. You bring in the art of Salvador Dali. And he is going back to time and the speed of light and no past, present. He's painting melting watches. It's like, oh my goodness. So it's all kind of interconnected, isn't it? It's just a zeitgeist that's just bubbling up.
And I love your phrase, bubbling up, because that's exactly what I'm writing about. That it was so exciting that because primarily of Carl Jung, who was able to have a bigger vision of the unconscious than Freud, we owe Freud the debt of opening up the unconscious as a huge, important study, scientific study. But he had a very limited view of the unconscious. Carl Jung had a much more expansive view, and it led to a disagreement, which they never would talk to each other again, because Freud could not deal with criticism. Okay. But he opened the door. So here are the two parallel paths that were bubbling up in the year, starting in the year 1900 and then throughout the 20th century. And that is the two parallel trips, one into the dark interior center of the human mind, which is the unconscious, and one into the dark interior center of the universe, which is the quantum realm. And what Jung, not only Jung and Pauli, another brilliant book I can't praise high enough, The Tao of Physics by Fritjof Capra.
Oh, right. We interviewed him right after he published that book back in the 70s. It changed my life reading that book.
Right. So what I'm doing is I'm picking up after that. In other words, what Fritjof Capra did was he showed conclusively that four of the leading founders of quantum theory were all deeply connected to ancient Eastern spiritual traditions and teachings.
Right.
That's not a coincidence. It's a synchronicity. It's the reason they were able to discover what seemed impossible, mystical, irrational. They've proved it. Quantum theory is the most successful scientific theory of all time. It's the reason you and I can speak over the internet and we can use the World Wide Web. But on a deeper psychological and spiritual level, the founders of quantum theory, at least four of the leaders, three of them were totally into Eastern mysticism, Werner Heisenberg, Erwin Schrödinger, and Niels Bohr. And here's a great Niels Bohr story that's been confirmed, because this is not just theory, this is real life. So Niels Bohr gets the Nobel Prize in quantum theory. He was known as the father of quantum theory. He's Danish. The King of Denmark knights him. And so one of the perks was he got to design his own coat of arms. He chooses as the key image for his coat of arms the yin-yang symbol of the Tao. Okay? I mean, this is fantastic. So the left hemisphere scientists, philosophers, and teachers to this day want to put a sharp dividing line between science and mysticism and spirituality. But the quantum theorists were showing us, and Carl Jung was explaining, you can't. They're connected. We don't know exactly how they're connected.
So you're saying like they're related to the mystical traditions that have been around for eons of time that have proven themselves to have the wisdom, and it's being connected to the physical in a way that hasn't been done before. I want to talk more about this in a minute, but I want to remind our listeners, I am here with Douglas Grunther, and he is the author of The Quantum and the Dream, Visionary Consciousness, AI, and the New Renaissance. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, douglasgrunther.com. He spells his last name G-R-U-N-T-H-E-R, douglasgrunther.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in